Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is the 27th day of March 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if you want to wander on over to the merriment that is any given evening in the real-time multimedia experience that is The Horn chat room. Just HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room, and you'll be right there. Pick yourself out a screen name, a password, and you'll be in there among the Horn Denistas, to wit, Anatole. Good evening. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky. Jug of Punch is now wandering into the room. Others will be along presently. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. That's out of the way. Before we go any further this evening, a pair of birthday wishes to go out. Good evening to Devin, and happy birthday. And happy birthday to Doodle, our youngest here. It is mind-boggling to even contemplate that our Doodle is 18 years old this very day. Cool when we can have celebrate multiple birthdays at the same time, isn't it? I think so. Oh, let's see. Of course, there's the usual housekeeping to get out of the way. This is a listener-supported effort, which means that for 10 years now, there have been no ads for Buy Gold Now or bowling balls that can be picked up by vacuum cleaners and dropped on Swedish mattresses made of foam developed by NASA. No ads. You've never had to stop for an ad for an herbal remedy that will grow hair on said bowling ball. No, none of that. This is strictly a matter of the people who want to hear this program making sure that it is possible for this program to continue to exist. And we try to raise about $150 every evening. We are, I am proud to announce, we're actually out in front. We've got, let's see, for the month of March, about $480 to go, which will actually put us, well, it's exciting. It's downright exciting. Because instead of being behind on bills, we're actually out in front of them, most of them. We got a couple more to go, but current or out in front is something with which we are not particularly familiar around here. But there's been a lot of help this month, and it has been quite amazing. So thank you, one and all. Anybody who wants to jump in on that, well, the contribute tab is at headonradionetwork.com. And there's a series of fields that you fill out. The one the one about your maiden aunt's shoe size you can leave blank. It's all about just getting to the next screen. Okie doke. Okie doke. So that pretty much takes care of the housekeeping around here. A question coming in from the Angry Indian. Did you know the largest KKK chapter in the USA was in Indiana? Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. lots of Klansmen there in Talibandiana, and I'll bet their grandsons and great-grandsons and the ladies' auxiliary are probably still scurrying about cockroach-like behind the baseboards there, because it seems like it never entirely goes away. Right. But so it is 5 minutes past the hour, and among other things, well, by Jove, it is Friday on the front porch. Friday on the front porch indeed, and that means that here in about 55 minutes we will start our extraordinary ordinary roundtable comprised of Maud, otherwise known as the Gizmo Line, and whoever's on that, plus the folks who chime in after longtime Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky puts up the bat signal, as it were, or the, I don't know, the Friday on the front porch signal, the horn signal, the bob signal. He'll put that up, and folks can join in on what I hope will be another in a series of delightful roundtable conversations among extraordinary, ordinary folks who somehow or another, despite the predatory behavior of the 1%, managed to continue to carry this crumbling empire upon their backs. Like I said, it should be fun. Now, like I said, we'll put that all together and get it rolling at about 7 p.m. or thereabouts. And if you would like to participate in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and never have, it's easily done. Just send a contact request on Skype, which is incredibly easy to use. I mean, really easy to use. Send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc, and Sparky, expert that he is, will lead you and guide you into the process, and hopefully you'll be part of what has proven to be a very popular little event from Friday to Friday to Friday. So, where to go? Apparently, it is not what has happened in Talibandiana is not playing well. Understanding of, as Peter Godbold taught long ago, normal is nothing more than a setting on a dryer.
The new TurboTax.
Stop it. Who cares about the new TurboTax? And why is it even talking? Shut up. Shut up! Yeah. Talibandiana's decision to enshrine bigotry, religious bigotry, is not, it's not playing at all well with people who themselves are not bigots, who are not homophobes. Nonetheless, it is it's the law, at least until, hopefully, the Supreme Court strikes it down. All we can do, really, is wait and see. I think we kind of need to backtrack, though, and I know it's kind of icky, but we'll deal with it. Oh, wait, before we march off into the swamp, here's a fun one. I read this earlier today, and I thought, well, you know, hey, a little free advertising never hurts. When we do advertising on this program, it's always free. Unpaid endorsements, whatever. I figured, and didn't we mention this at some point in time here in the Horn Family Commune Congregation? How long could it possibly be until Willie Nelson starts branding his own line of weed? Well, there it is. It'll be called Willie's Reserve. And he announced it sort of backhandedly or offhandedly in an interview with the Daily Beast. So, pot lobbyist Michael Bowman told the Daily Beast, right now we'll focus on the states where legalization has occurred And as new states open up, those opportunities will present themselves on a state-by-state basis. There will be movement in the next year or so in terms of opening the store. Yeah. Michael Bowman continued and said, "This is a culmination of Willie's vision and his whole life. I'm not sure any of us could have predicted how fast the dominoes would start falling once they started falling." So, what? Watch this space. But coming soon to a legal cannabis state near you, Willie's Reserve. And capitalism and marketing being what they are, that's going to sell like, I don't know, it's going to sell like Willie brand weed. It's going to sell like hotcakes, don't you think? Because trying to market in competition, you know, well, it's like that. I saw one of those internet memes that showed Johnny Cash from a very long time ago, and he was sitting in a bush eating cake. And the meme on the photograph said, "You may be high, but you will never be Johnny Cash eating cake in a bush high." It's kind of like that. You may be buying legal weed, you may be smoking legal weed, but you're not smoking Willie's weed. This may be the marketing coup of the first couple of decades of the 21st century. Who knows? Maybe when it goes live and legal, we might even get Mr. Nelson on the program. Isn't it fun to talk about Willie Nelson and refer to him as Mr. Nelson? Yeah. Oh, let's see. There's Roger from Humboldt in the chat room. Special message to Roger. Otchway, the ale may, the Eads say, are on the A-way. Now, we've talked about that in the past. I was gifted with 4 very special squash seeds from an ancient strain of native squash that had not been known about until a few years ago. And recognizing that my cultivatory skills are not nearly the equal of someone like Rogers. Well, it's planting season, Roger tells us, out there in Humboldt County. And so the 4 ancient, I mean, they're from a recent plant, but anyway, there are 4 seeds, and hopefully Roger will be able to get at least one of those 4 to cultivate. And away we'll go. I think that's just so very cool. And then once there's a good handful of seeds, maybe we'll be able to share them around. And the Horn community can start growing a 10,000-year-old, previously heretofore until recently unknown variety of absolutely, what I'm told, is delicious squash. Squash being one-third of the Holy Trinity CBS agriculture, developed by the natives of this hemisphere, and which allowed, well, the rest of the world to eat as a result of the so-called Columbian Exchange: corn, beans, squash. Yeah. And then there's chilies. Yum. I'm not sure. Okay, thank you, Gerald. I'm not sure exactly what the song is, but we'll go and look for it. Oh, yay. Jug of Punch noting, I just now saw my first robin. He's up in Ohio. There is hope. But then, of course, let's remember, the robins never go away. They just go and hide and hide from the cold and change their diet and stuff. But, yeah, there's a problem, Roger? Oh, no. Oh, no, that not a problem with that. Should only take the first year. Okay. And then he corrected it. Never mind. I'm always scatterbrained on Friday on the front porch. Thank you very kindly, Jug of Punch, Thomas. for getting us started this evening. We've got $30 to go this evening, and whatever we can, well, that'll take us downhill toward the end of March. So thank you for getting us started this evening, Thomas. Ron and Raleigh with a note. So now in the near future, I can enjoy two fingers of Dan Aykroyd's Skull Tequila and a bowl of Willie's Reserve. Wow! Or actually, that would be wow. But could be. Could be indeed. Let's see. Oh, God, we're going into the swamp, aren't we? Well, wait. Let's stay away from the swamp for a minute. We've got to do this, but let's enjoy the beginning of Friday on the Front Porch before we do. And what I'm Agnes sent a story along to me the last few days, last day or so, actually. She found it over at National Petroleum Radio, where, despite the petroleum, there is still some pretty interesting reporting going on. And it's a story by Manvi Singh, How Snobbery Helped Take the Spice Out of European Cooking. Yeah, why not? Let's do a little food porn before we go off into the creepy stuff, because this is creepy, the story coming up. It's really creepy. But it you can find it at npr.org, How Snobbery Helped Take the Spice Out of European Cooking. And it's interesting to note that part of the reason that Europeans, white Europeans, began wandering around the globe, some of it goes all the way back to the era of and before, slightly before Marco Polo, and, of course, the Silk Road. The Romans had some knowledge of things going on the Indian subcontinent, and I think there may be some sketchy indication that there was some tiny little knowledge of what was then referred to as Cathay, China. But it's after Marco Polo that one of the primary reasons for engaging in trade with the East was spice, flavor. Black pepper, turmeric, cumin, allspice, nutmeg, cinnamon, right? And so apparently there has been a study of late that tries to explain how it is that so many other world cultures are so deeply and richly and broadly flavorful, whereas European cookery isn't. It's delicious. It can be delicious, but it's not particularly spicy. And not even that doesn't always mean, you know, hot. No. But I thought about this story when I was talking about the corned bean squash thing. Because remember, apart from black pepper, nobody in the world had ever really felt the burn like a chili brings until after 1492. And in point of fact, the little bit of heat that you get from black pepper is what caused the Atne Ute Aitbre explorers from Europe to refer to chilies as peppers. They're not peppers. There's no relationship whatsoever between a pepper and a chili, except for the fact that they're both plants that grow on planet Earth. But think about the way that, say, Indian cooking or Thai cooking or Vietnamese and even some Korean cookery, and certainly Sichuan-style cuisine in China, incorporates chili peppers. Well, before 1492, that didn't happen. And then no squash. Now, there may have been garbanzos and lentils, but there were no beans, and certainly no maize. Right? Yeah. Well, interestingly, researchers at the Indian Institute for Technology in Jodhpur researched ingredient list for more than 2,000 classical Indian recipes. And then they analyzed the chemical components. And they found that what makes the cuisine of the Indian subcontinent so wonderful, oh God, I love Indian food, is the fact that the various flavors have molecular structures that don't overlap. The minute you say molecular structure, I'm way out of my depth, but I understand the concept. But when you compare it to European cooking, the flavor structures, the molecular structures, do overlap. So that's why you get such a wild combination that the arias that your taste buds sing with a good curry, or garam masala, or paneer makhani. Nope. Tomatoes? Imagine in Italy without tomatoes, or Germany without potatoes. Yep. Colombian exchange. But anyway, it turns out that Euro wealth snobbery is why the food became so non-spicy. Because originally, up to like, I think it says here, the 16th century, European cooking was every bit as spicy as, once they had access to the spices from the Orient, every bit as spicy as Asian cooking was. But when the hoi polloi, you know, us, the poors, began getting access to spices because they had become cheaper as a result of increased trade. Well, the rich said, well, goodness me, Myrtle, why on earth would we ever want to bother to have our food taste like the proles' food? Do ring the bell and tell Chef to bland it up a bit, will you? And that's where it comes from. The author of the piece, Manvi Singh, says, serving richly spiced stews was no longer a status symbol for Europe's wealthiest families. Even the middle classes could afford to spice up their grub. So the elite recoiled from the increasing popularity of spices. They moved on to an aesthetic theory of taste. Rather than infusing food with spice, they said things should taste like themselves. Meat should taste like meat, and anything you add only serves to intensify the existing flavors. The shift began in France in the mid-1600s, and the rest of Europe soon adopted the new style. Paul Friedman, a professor of history at Yale University, said, it's a redefinition of what elegant is. It's sort of like in fashion, for a while having more frills, more jewelry was fashionable, but then someone said that a basic black dress with some pearls is much better. Along the way, spices lost their medicinal value in Europe. And that's how that came to be. Me? I love the spices. And sadly enough, we don't have a good Indian restaurant. There's a decent one in Charleston, but apart from that, So no paneer for Bob. No Indian curry. Now we do have a little Thai place, but it's only open from like April to November, and the proprietress heads back to Thailand for December, January, February, March. They'll be back open soon, so I can at least get some, what's the name of the soup? Tom Yum and Tom Kha. Yeah, I love that stuff. Oh, well, I have evaded the swamp for long enough. We haven't been out to Colorado, Stan. and Chappie Klingenschmidt for quite some time. And just as well, I guess, because it's been sort of refreshing not to, hasn't it? But go we must. Now, remember, 70% of the electorate in Chappie's district, Chappie being short for Chaplin, and Chaplin being what he isn't anymore after he was disgraced and removed as such from a chaplaincy position in the United States Navy. Chappie, even though he's in the House of Representing or whatever, he's continuing to promulgate and propagate his really icky brand of hate. So, what happened is that a woman in Colorado who was pregnant was attacked by another woman who stabbed her in the stomach and, as Shakespeare said, ripped her baby untimely from the womb. This is horrifying. This is sickening and brutal to contemplate. But I think we do ourselves a disservice if we do not ponder the depth of perversity that is the American evangelical fundamentalist right-wing religion industry. Again, in his district in Colorado, Chappie Gordon Klingenschmidt was elected with 70% of the electorate voting for him. So naturally, Chappie couldn't keep his filthy mouth shut when this poor woman was attacked and had her baby murdered in her womb. Now, Chappie is all worried about the little fetuses, you know, until they're born. After that, being a Republican, well, the little fetuses are on their own. So when news of the attack broke, never being one to let a good horror go to waste, Chappie Klingenschmidt said this.
A pregnant woman in Colorado was stabbed by a woman who wanted to cut the baby out of her belly and kidnap the baby. According to 9 News Denver, who reports that a 34-year-old woman, a suspect, was arrested last Wednesday after Longmont police near Boulder, Colorado, say that the suspect attacked a woman who was 7 months pregnant and cut the victim's unborn baby from her womb. Sadly, the baby died. But the pregnant woman is alive and is recovering in the hospital.
Although she is, by definition, no longer pregnant. Little details like that slip past Chappie. He's very busy praying in Jesus' name and everything, and you can't expect him to catch all the nuances of... Right. So, okay. So that's where we are. That's, although horribly delivered with all of the professionalism of a run-over squirrel. Those are the basic facts. And the basic facts are not what got Chappie Klingenschmidt in hot water. This is.
Here's what the Bible says in Hosea chapter 13. There is a demonic spirit of murder, right?
And wait, okay, so this is, like I said, this is what got him in trouble. And he has just told us that this woman was attacked not by another human being, but by a demon. Because Chappie lives in what Carl Sagan once described as a demon-haunted world. You might want to get the hockey puck.
We saw this in Israel, where history records in Hosea 13, the people of Samaria must bear their guilt because they have rebelled against their God. They will fall by the sword, their little ones will be dashed to the ground, their pregnant women ripped open.
Charming, huh? There, you can, you know, if you look hard enough, there's always something awful you can find in the Bible about the behavior of the great big bearded juvenile delinquent psychopath in the sky. I mean, I think when we get to Hosea 13:16 like this, we've really got to add psychopath to the list. And again, I just reiterate, if anybody's wondering why I want nothing to do with the Abrahamic Lord God of hosts, this is one of them. This is a Bible verse that says that God, you know, all loving, all merciful, caused pregnant women to be ripped open because, well, you know, for God so loved the world, right? That's some love. Psychopathic love. The love of a god is very different from the love of a square. But Chappie wasn't happy. Chappie wasn't happy to simply quote that verse and say, "Nah."
This was a prophecy about the people of Samaria back in the day, who are bearing this sin because they have rebelled against their God. I wonder if there's prophetic significance to America today in that scripture.
You know, why don't you just leave it there, Chappie? Just wonder. And leave the rest of us to wonder, too. But no. He can't. He has all the subtlety of the trumpet blast of an elephant. He has all the subtlety of a snake bite, which is probably more apt and accurate a description.
This is the curse of God upon America for our sin of not protecting innocent children in the womb.
You got that? This is how the evangelical, fundamentalist, right-wing religion industry God, who also happens to be the same God that's worshipped by Presbyterians and Baptists, and, well, Baptists are evangelical, fundamentalists, but Presbyterians and Episcopalians and Lutherans and Congregationalists and Catholics and Greek Orthodox and all that's it's the same Jews, it's the God that's their God. And according to Chappie Klingenschmidt, that loving God punished collectively. And you know, it's interesting, as human beings, we've recognized that collective punishment is just plain evil. You don't go and bomb a civilian population because their military behaved horribly. But, well, not in Chappie's world. Chappie worships a God that is so brutal, so hateful, and so bloodthirsty that it, the God, will actually pluck one single innocent human being out of millions and have that person tortured and her in utero baby killed because of the conduct of people she neither knows nor even thinks about. Man, that's some loving God, isn't it? Yeah.
A sin because they have rebelled against their God. I wonder if there's prophetic significance to America today in that scripture. This is the curse of God upon America for our sin of not protecting innocent children in the womb. And part of that curse for our rebellion against God as a nation is that our pregnant women are ripped open.
Our pregnant women are ripped open. Suddenly, one woman, and it was horrible enough what happened to her, she's been multiplied. It's a miracle. Yeah. So that's the backstory to all of this. And this guy gets all kinds of contributions and donations. And remember, he's tax exempt, so that means that the people who donate to him are actually taking money out of the public commons and putting it into Chappie's purse, because I guess the pay that you get for sitting in the Colorado legislature, it can't even compete with what you can get doing the evangelical hustle. So, like I said, that's the backstory. It is not, however, the whole story. Because, as Kevin in Colorado Springs pointed out to me by email last night, there has been a backlash. And Republicans all over the place are scrambling backwards, trying to get away from the toxicity that is Gordon Klingenschmitt. Demanding apologies, and he doesn't speak for us, and all of that kind of stuff. The Denver Post, with an article. In which they report that two fellow El Paso County Republicans, Laura Carno, who in January started a Facebook page called Conservatives Against Gordon Klingenschmitt, and former Representative Mark Waller, who used to represent the House District in Colorado Springs, now held by Klingenschmitt, are deeply offended. It's disgusting. I thought Gordon Klingenschmitt would be our next Todd Akin, Carno said Thursday. I didn't know he would be our next Westboro Baptist Church. This poor woman gets gets attacked, and he uses this tragedy to drive traffic to his ministry. Then there's Waller, who, of course, was a wild-eyed Republican in his own right, and had tried to pass a bill that would enhance punishments for people who harm fetuses in the womb. It was sort of a backdoor assault on a woman's right to choose. He said, Gordon Klingenschmitt, his remarks do nothing to advance the cause for us. Because, of course, it's all about the cause. Then there's Sarah Zagorski. Sarah Zagorski is the executive director of Colorado Citizens for Life. And she said, God did not will for this horrific tragedy to happen. Sadly, Representative Klingenschmitt's comments take away from the seriousness of this tragedy and the aftermath Michelle and her family are facing. Representative Beth McCann, a Democrat from Denver, said, Representative Klingenschmitt is politicizing a terrible human tragedy. The statement was incredibly insensitive to a family that has been through an unimaginable, horrific experience. Polly Lawrence, a Republican from Douglas County, said she was appalled. Gordon does not speak for his caucus. The new chairman of the state GOP, Steve House, said he does not represent the Colorado Republican Party. Yeah. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But the problem here is that he does. Chappie Klingenschmitt does speak for a whole bunch of Republicans. At least 70% of the ones in the county that elected him and sent him to the Colorado State House. Because, you see, that's the nature of our American political system, isn't it? When you vote for someone, you are tacitly stating, I wish for this person to be in government and to speak for me, and I endorse this person with my vote. And you know what? According to the biblical literalists of the evangelical fundamentalist religion industry, the Bible is the literal word of God. It isn't to be understood as metaphor. It is not to be understood allegorically or analogously. It is not to be understood as simile. It is to be understood as literal, received truth. So when God says in Hosea that he's out there having women's bellies ripped open and babies killed in the womb, he means it. That ain't no metaphor. That is, in fact, reality. It is a manifestation of God's love for his people. And while this is not Prayer Meeting Wednesday, we have to take this into account as we consider the nature of the body politic in this country. Because, you see, poll after poll after poll shows that people who think like Gordon Klingenschmitt are actually, if not an outright majority, a significant plurality in this country. They're the same people who say evolution is just a theory. In many ways, there's overlap between them and the people who say that climate change is just a theory, even as the theory begins to lap at people's necks. And the Republicans should not be allowed to run away from him like this. They need to own him, to own what he says, because he is a member of their party. Until such time as they drum him the hell out, and don't think for a second that there isn't a procedure in the Colorado legislature whereby a member for conduct can be removed from office by that body. Until such time as the Colorado legislature removes him from their presence and his odious hatred, then they, too, like the voters who voted for him, tacitly endorse the hate that moves his very being. And I think we need to be clear about that. Because, see, the Republicans for Colorado for Life, and the chairman of the state GOP, and the woman who said that he was gonna, she figured he'd be their next Todd Akin, but didn't know he'd be their next Westboro Baptist Church. She was as silent as the tomb when Klingenschmitt said this.
Now let's take a moment and discern the spirits. There is a demonic spirit of lying inside of some people who claim to be other than what they truly are. If a man or a woman claims not to be a man or a woman, but to be the opposite, so that they can enter the private locker rooms of the opposite gender and violate the privacy of other people, then it's not just a private fantasy that they're having in their own house or in their own bedroom. We might, for purposes of public policy, be able to allow people to pretend. But if they're not just pretending, but they're asking the government to endorse and promote their lie by altering their birth certificate or driver's license or passport or gym membership, in this case, so that they can violate the privacy rights of not just of other women who are endangered by this bad policy, but of little girls.
Endangered. And again, let's be clear. Chappie is worked up about transgendered people using the potty. But being a fiscal conservative, he doesn't want to pass a bill that gives them all corks either. you know. Without a shred of evidence, he says, and notice at the front end, by implication, all transgendered people are possessed by a demon of lying, because he's done discerned the spirits. I think maybe after Friday on the front porch is over with, I may discern some spirits too. I haven't decided whether I'm going to discern the spirit of tequila, the spirit of rum, or the spirit of just, you know, rot gut brown liquor. We're having a cold snap here. Well, brown liquor for cold weather, clear liquor for warm. I'm also going to discern the need for a freaking swirly straw from all of this hate. It's more fun than, you know, it's more fun than showering with bleach, frankly. And I'm okay with tequila as long as it doesn't make me break out in felonies. So back to Chappie.
We're going to be in that gym and see naked men parading their parts.
Parading. Naked men in the gym parading their parts. When's the last time, guys? Because most of us have been in a gym, and most of us have been naked around other men in a gym from time to time because, well, you know, the whole showering after a workout kind of thing, and then the hell and horror of post-physical education showering in, say, junior high school, middle school, high school, college, the Y, what have you. In all those times. And, of course, guys do this. You know, they'll kind of check out the other guy and they look, you know, just kind of measuring because, you know, we're guys and we're all kind of sensitive and insecure. And sometimes you feel better, sometimes you feel worse. Sometimes the guy stretches it out and says, "Welcome to Jamaica. Have a nice day." Bad joke. I'll tell it later. Or not. But that, you know, that goes on. And I guess it's natural, I suppose. But parading? I can tell you honestly. I mean, I've been in dressing rooms before theater, and it can get, you know, the theater, the acting crowd, you know, community theater, whatever, it can get pretty flamboyant. But I've never seen a parade. Really? I think Chappie is telling us more about himself than he is about these demon-infested transgendered people with their parades. I think Chappie might actually be fantasizing some parades. I mean, that's a little creepy. I was reminded of the Disney classic version of Winnie the Pooh when there was a parade for Pooh maybe it was for Eeyore. Who was the parade for? But I don't think it was the parade that Chappie has in mind.
But they can violate the privacy rights, not just of other women who are endangered by this bad policy, but of little girls who are going to be in that gym and see naked men parading their parts.
I mean, are there batons? I guess you could twirl it like a baton. Or, I don't know, tassels? Little tiny beanies with propellers on it? I don't know.
That is a violation. It's not just a spirit of lying anymore. Now it's a predatory spirit of sexual exploitation.
Okay, so transgendered people are possessed by a demon of lying and a demon of sexual exploitation. Are we clear?
And we need to stand against that. We need to protect our women and children from this perversion. And I wonder if you would pray with me about this.
No, Chappie, I'm not. But it might be kind of fun to hear how you talk to the Almighty. Let's see if a little bit more latency slips out.
The Bible says this in Deuteronomy chapter 23. No one who has been emasculated by crushing or cutting may enter the assembly of the Lord.
That only applies to entering the assembly of the Lord. It doesn't. Never mind. Trying to parse Bronze Age religious hallucinations. It's past me, especially on a Friday.
Well, if they can't enter the assembly of the Lord, why should they be able to enter your women's locker room? Let's pray about this.
Because the women's locker room is just like the assembly of the Lord. Have we got this? Pray away, Chappie.
Father in heaven, we pray in Jesus' name that you will enable the good people of Michigan to stand up and enforce the laws that protect children from predators. Father, I pray that you will vindicate Yvette Cormier. And God, give her true vindication, Father, not just...
And not just that off-brand knockoff vindication, but the real stuff, the 200 proof, your holiness.
Restore gym membership. But Father, I pray there be an entire boy.
All this is about, by the way, a really hateful woman who joined a gym that had progressive values and was open and welcoming of the transgender community, and she pissed and moaned and insulted everybody until the gym just said, "Fine, here's your money back. You're out. You can't come back. We're done with you. You're awful. You're nasty. You're vile. You're odious. You're disgusting. Go work out with some bigot somewhere, but stay away from here." So now she's a martyr, and you know she's got the sign INRI right up above her little cross because she can't go work out at the gym anymore. You know, I'm nailed right in. Oh, for God's sakes! This is America, though. This isn't just Gordon Klingenschmitt. This is a whole bunch of America. And yeah, they walk among us. You probably go past them in the grocery store. You're probably standing across from them on the other side of the pump when you're putting gas in your car. You never know. There is an urge toward fascism in this crumbling empire, that these people are not going to be happy with until they have completely achieved it. Meanwhile, Chappie himself says he is being persecuted. Yeah, no kidding. He was interviewed about it on Colorado's Morning News.
Morning News at 8:41. State Republicans are kind of distancing themselves from our next guest, Colorado.
Kinda. They're running as fast as their little legs will carry them because they realize that this guy's pulled the curtain back on a whole lot of Republican hate. No, that's not us. Yes, it is. All we have to do is wait till 2016 and we see your little pro-life platform and your anti-LGBT platform in your weird little clavern plank platform document. Yeah, it is you.
Colorado Springs Representative Gordon Klingenschmitt, because of comments he made about that Longmont attack last week on his YouTube show.
This is the curse of God upon America for our sin of not protecting innocent children in the womb.
The representative joins us live now. It's good to have you on. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Yes, I do wear two hats. I am, of course, in the Capitol. I'm a state representative, but on Sunday...
Yeah, by God, he may wear two hats, but they're both ass hats.
I have a different job. I'm an ordained minister in my church where I quote the Bible, and it's not just a YouTube show. We're actually in 45 million homes on satellite television every day. And first of all, I do want to ask anybody's forgiveness. If you were offended because I quoted the Bible in church, I ask you to forgive me. But I will not apologize for quoting the Bible in church. And the Bible in Hosea does talk about ancient Samaria, when the pregnant women were ripped open, and that was described in the Bible as a curse from God. And I also said this is not God's will. This was a demonic spirit.
Oh, well, that clears it all up. But he's right. It's in the book. It's in the Bible. It's their book. They worship it, and they need to own it. But you did notice the non-apology apology. He's sorry if you were offended, which, of course, puts the burden on you because you're wrong for being offended by him for quoting the Bible. Jesus. Yeah, no apology. None whatsoever. But he's in 45,000 homes on cable. Wouldn't it be interesting to know what cable system allows that kind of filth to go into homes? Where is the power of the free market where Chappie Klingenschmidt is concerned? Yeah, climb right up. Get the ladder, Chappie, and start nailing, buddy. Because you know what? You should be run off the airwaves. And it's fairly easy to do. Right, find out who the cable systems are that are running him. Write to those cable systems and say, listen, we're going to take down the names of all of your advertisers on any channel that's there. We're going to start writing to them and telling them that by advertising on your cable system, they're supporting a hate-filled monstrosity like Chappie Klingenschmidt, and we won't do business with you until he's gone. This isn't one of those things where you say, well, you know, they can just turn it off. Bullshit. Oh, I'm sorry. I heard that, I guess, optimistically. News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out, Chappie claims he's in 45 million homes, and then he woke up. Well, it doesn't mean he's being watched by 45 million people, no. By the way, he tried to buy his way out of problems. There is a crowdfunding campaign at GoFundMe to help out with the medical bills for the woman who was attacked. It is the Michelle Wilkins Fund of Longmont, Colorado. It has received $84,000 in contributions from all over the country and all over the world. And, of course, Chappie donated $1,000. Oh. Well, the Wilkins family put out a statement saying, just wanted everyone to know, payment refunded. A refund of $1,000 has been issued for a payment made by Gordon Klingenschmidt for Michelle Wilkins Fund. The money has been removed from your account, Michelle Wilkins Trust Fund. But this, we need to understand, is not, this isn't the fringe of the right-wing religion industry. This is mainstream as Protestantism, fundamentalist Protestantism can get. And you can walk into Baptist and Methodist and Pentecostal and Holiness and Apostolic and Church of God and Church of God of Prophecy and whatnot on any given Sunday, and you can hear this filth just pouring out of preachers' mouths. And it really wouldn't matter if they didn't then act upon it. You could not slide a playing card between the position of Gordon Klingenschmidt and the voters who voted in the legislature who did that filthy business in Indiana, Talibandiana, and you couldn't fit a playing card in the space between Gordon Klingenschmidt and Mike Pence of Talibandiana. And anybody who thinks that one could, well, denial is not just a river in Egypt. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob. Damn, I could have gone for several months without any mention of old Chappie. Let this be the beginning of another long Chappie absence. But it won't be. It won't be. Because, see, there's nobody out there who's... There are clear denunciations of the nastiness regarding Michelle Wilkins. but not a word about his anti-LGBT bigotry, because the Republican Party in Colorado and the rest of the country shares that bigotry. They never denounced him before. Now they do. Because it might be that they wind up getting painted with the same paintbrush that Chappie has painted himself. And you know what? That paint sticks. Ron and Raleigh also pointing out, Bob, I'm discerning two fingers of Bushmills as you have foisted Chappie on us without warning. I didn't even get a Bob, Bob, Bob for that. I think it really did take Ron and Raleigh by surprise. Jack in Shreveport says, by the way, Colorado did take the Medicaid expansion, didn't they? I wonder what financial trauma will follow the woman that was attacked along with the physical and emotional trauma. What if she was in a state that didn't have the expansion? Just had to mention that as fallout, too. In the Klingenschmidt clip, I didn't hear a word of concern for the woman that was attacked. Well, that's because he isn't. Jack says, P.S. and I agree that the GOP workers and voters need to take some personal responsibility for electing these freaks like Klingenschmidt. I'm tired of letting them get away without taking responsibility for letting or encouraging people like Klingenschmidt be elected. Jack also says, there's not a whole lot of room in those locker room showers to have a parade, is there? Kling and Spit clearly hasn't thought this through. Oh, yes, he has. It's just that he's thought it through with one hand rather busy, and he ain't crossing himself. No, Michael and Madison, this is not a rerun. Michael says, have the Feetles made it back on the charts? I feel like we just had a genital parade not so very long ago. I recall it being somewhat flagrant. We're Sergeant Chappie's flagrant genital parade. We hope you will enjoy the show. We're Sergeant Chappie's flagrant genital parade. Sit back and watch our urine flow. Sergeant Chappie's flagrant, Sergeant Chappie's flagrant, Sergeant Chappie's flagrant genital parade. It's wonderful to be here. It's certainly a thrill. You're such a filthy audience. We'd like to have you poo with us. We'd love to share the loo. Michael says, you know, it writes itself. Another hit from the unforgettable album, Meet the Feetles. So it is 3 minutes past the hour, and the Friday on the Front Porch bat signal has gone up. Oh, good. I'm always glad when I can create a laugh somewhere. Jack says, that one-hand busy comment totally cracked me up. Yeah, it's kind of hard to sort out the Zen Koan of what is the sound of one hand clapping. But by God, when it's Chappie Klingenschmidt talking about locker rooms, it doesn't. There's just not a whole lot of enlightenment necessary to figure out what the sound is of one hand slapping. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan says, "Reaction from Kansas Stan: spitting on the floor repeatedly." Yeah, the Chappie's one of those people that you want to work up a real good loogie for, you know, an outright sinus oyster before you even make the right. Well, there went dinner for Scott and Linda. Sorry, guys. Okay, so find a nice bumper. I think I better abandon that thread altogether. And let's just abandon the whole concept of chanty for a little bit. I just feel icky. Let's go back to the happy food porn story, shall we? Yeah, let's do. So it's Friday on the front porch. We've got the gizmo line already occupied. And that means we'll be firing up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group momentarily. I hope. Yeah. And thank you again to Thomas for kicking in on the fundraising goal as we try to exit March, actually ahead of the game a little bit and with all the bills current for a change. Anybody wanting to jump in alongside Thomas is more than welcome to do so and much appreciated at any amount. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Manhattan Transfer from a very long, long time ago. Spice of Life. Because. Hey, it's Friday on the front porch on the Horn. It's 9 minutes past the hour. And let's check in with the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, capably moderated by the one, the only, third stage guild navigator, Sparky. Hey, Sparky, how are you this evening?
Oh, little family worn out.
Family fun?
Yeah, but that's all over with. They're on their way back to the coast.
Everything okay?
Yeah. He's fine. Except for the, I little fracture, hairline fractures or something. He has to wear a back brace.
We were talking a little bit last night. You want to let people in on your little family adventure?
Oh, I don't know. I'm feeling kind of tired. I don't even want to talk about it anymore.
Fair enough. Suffice to say, be careful when working with electrical equipment, right?
Right.
Don't get your wires crossed.
Yeah, or don't try to catch a bolt going into a running generator.
Hey, okay. I think I agree with you now. That's plenty detail.
Yeah, well, that's the story he told me. But he's going back to work tomorrow.
Wow. Well, hey, the birthday boy's in the room, too. Hey, Devin.
Hey, Bob.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
So are there like, I can't hear the sound. You must have a great soundproof booth there, because I can't hear the sound of the wild party going on in the background.
Are you kidding me?
No, I really can't hear it. So, you know, kudos to you.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, it's just another day. I mean, you know.
Dare we ask what number?
30.
Ooh. Ooh. Big one.
Yes, I guess I'm 30 and flirty and all that. I don't know.
You're awesome for what you are.
Surely not.
Absolutely, and don't call me Shirley.
All right, Louise.
Very good. Let's see. Mr. Gibson's in the room this evening. Good to have you on board.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Doing good.
You're a little distant. I don't mean emotionally. I mean in terms of your voice.
Yeah, it's this mic, a new mic I'm trying out. Is that better?
So far, it's not a great new mic. I mean, good clarity,
yeah,
but
okay.
You're just miles and miles away.
Yeah, it does sound distant, doesn't it? Well, doing okay.
Good. Well, hopefully we'll get some rollicking good conversation going in short order to get it. Good evening. Good evening, Gerald.
Good evening, Bob.
With the weather being what it is, kind of coolish, do you have your Shut It Sparky all fired up and ready to go in case we start getting tales of 75-degree days?
I not only have a Shut It Sparky, but I have a Shut It just about anyone who is over 45 degrees.
It's 80.
Shut It Sparky.
Man, I tell you, you did. You had it wound up and set on hair trigger, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. But at least the weather is not frightful. It could be worse, you know. Is this our Easter squall?
I don't know. There's snowflakes tomorrow. Bastards.
Well, you know, I don't know. Well, at least I'll have a snowball to take to the Senate. You know.
Yes, do tell.
No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, how are you, Bob?
Hanging. It was kind of touch and go earlier today. About 7:30 this morning, all the uninterruptible power supplies in here started beeping. And somehow or another, I've trained myself that while I can sleep through a lot, I don't sleep through those things beeping in the studio.
So what are you trying to say?
Well, that meant
coal doesn't keep the lights on?
Coal did not keep the lights on today.
That's a blasphemy. You know that.
By the way, I forget whose post I saw on Facebook. But this is great. You know, we on this side have been referred to as tree huggers for a long time.
Yes.
New term for the other side, tree muggers.
Tree muggers.
Yes.
Hey, that kind of fits.
Yeah, it does. All that beeping started up, so I came back here. Power was out. And the nice thing about these uninterruptible power supplies is that they provide you with enough time to get everything properly shut down before the power just goes. So got it all shut down, and we were without power for, 8 hours? And, I mean, like me, you probably heard the rain come through last night, right, Gerald?
Yeah.
I mean, and that's exactly what it was. It was freaking rain.
Yeah, no high wind, nothing like that. Just rain.
Just rain. Just gentle spring rain.
And it was heavy at times, but not, you know.
But it wasn't. It wasn't. There was no hurricane force. I mean, it was not. It's not like it was raining lead shot or anything that could take down a phone line. But you know, that's the funny thing about publicly permitted monopolies. You know, because that's what utilities are. In the ancient theory of progressive government, we said, okay, we're going to let power companies have an essentially a monopoly, but we're going to ride herd on them to make sure that they don't abuse the people. Well, we have since given up on that notion, and what we have now are government-sanctioned monopolies which abuse people at will. And part of the way they do that is by pumping all their money into their shareholders and not into their infrastructure. So that, I mean, there was a service area that was out of electricity that ran from, like, Point Pleasant to Roanoke. Two states.
What's the big deal?
Right, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, you're going to have some power outages when you're running a system from the late 19th century.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably just, what, a couple hundred thousand out? If it was that big, I would assume. 150,000?
Actually, no. By the time I saw the map, it was like 300 in Kanawha County and 200 in Fayette County.
And
God knows why, but, you know, naturally, we were it.
Well, of course. Well, I had the same problem here. Yeah, I mean, the power goes out here all the time, just 5 miles from the state capital. So, you know, you're not alone.
No.
It's almost a weekly thing here.
But it's very frustrating because one realizes that this could be fairly easily alleviated by simply encouraging people to put solar panels on their roofs, you know, kind of like what Sparky's been talking about going on out in California. And that
exactly.
way you wind up with a distributed grid and you have much less in the way of power outages, right?
Well, one would think, anyway. But you know, our good T-Publican legislature, they're going to ban those evil solar panels. Because, you know,
you can't buy one of those communist Tesla automobiles in West Virginia because freedom!
That's right. Because coal keeps the lights on.
Even though the power grid you'd be plugging your Tesla into is hooked up to a coal-fired power grid. That's the part that's really kind of lost on me.
That's the goddess of irony there.
No, that's Senate President Bill Cole.
Bill Cole, yeah.
Who runs a traditional car dealership and doesn't want those nasty electric cars being sold in West by Coal, Virginia.
And is not a bit bashful about stating so. I mean, that's what gets me. He just doesn't care. Doesn't care who knows it. But he didn't like them. Because they're in the majority, and by God, these Democrats are going to pay for the 83 years that they've been kept under thumb. I guess. I don't know. But
right.
Anyway, since it's getting cold, I guess you'll get some good coal smoke tonight, do you think?
Oh, yeah. We'll probably get smoked right out of the bedroom. I'm sure as the sun sets, a big load of fallen by the railroad tracks bituminous will be loaded onto the grate downhill from me, and we'll be breathing it in no time flat.
Yeehaw! Well,
that's right, yeehaw!
Right.
Got the anthracite of burning hair.
Well, because that's what you're supposed to burn for. But look, when you're collecting your coal from the side of the railroad tracks, there's just not a hell of a lot of anthracite running through here.
Or buying it down to southern states, you just get whatever. They're probably buying it from the mine.
No, they're probably buying it from somebody who's got the guy who puts the little flyer up on the bulletin board up at the Wiggling Pig that says house coal for sale.
Oh, yeah. He's probably buying it at the mine.
Could be. Yeah.
No, he's probably stealing it at the mine.
We'll see.
No, I doubt it. I doubt it.
They're pretty.
I had some friends that used to work in mountaintop removal mining, and they would buy coal, and they actually scaled it, and you paid for it, but the security guard would get you if you didn't, because I guess there's a gate, you know, like most of them that I've been around have a security guard at a gate. Either way, you really shouldn't be burning it in your fireplace. It's just really, it's just a bad idea. But, you know, the people around here are full of bad ideas.
That's so 1700.
That's so John Peter Sally. Yeah. Hey, let's see. Looking around the rest of the room, Carol Abel joins us from Australia.
Hello, how you doing, matey?
Ah, doing wonderful, thanks. You, Sheila?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's fine here.
I'm sorry.
I'm just so happy to join up with the birthday group.
any big news down that way? I hear Australia's getting ready to let contracts on building its new submarine fleet.
Oh my God. That's just what they need. No, I think the biggest fight I see down here is people against what they call coal seam gas, which is what we call fracking.
It's not entirely what fracking is. Coal seam gas is a bit of a different prospect. Because an Australian, we talked about this a while back, an Australian firm wanted to try coal seam gas extraction in either Montana or Wyoming. I can't remember which. But it involves going down into the coal seam under the ground and setting fire to the coal underground. Deliberately setting a coal fire and then capturing the gas off of that.
Wow, that's really advanced.
Doesn't that just really sound ever so intelligent?
I'm so glad I moved to a more intelligent country.
Excuse me, but who in the hell thought that was a good idea?
An Aussie.
No, I mean, God.
No, I'm sure it's, I mean, no.
Well, it obviously works very, very well in Centralia, Pennsylvania, because that coal seam fire has been burning for 60 years.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Every now and then,
you know, they can get grabby.
A big hole will open up in the ground and people will fall in it and die.
And freedom.
Right. Well, I am happy to be on here with everybody celebrating Devin's birthday, because we can be that rowdy party that we couldn't hear in the background.
Hey, and we still, well, I don't know. Then again, we've already talked about parades this evening, so. Maybe it's a good thing there are no parades up Devin's way, right?
Yeah, and don't sing that song again, Bob.
Oh, why?
You need eye bleach for that.
No, ear bleach. You needed ear bleach.
Ear bleach? Well, I envisioned something.
Oh, okay, so some third eye bleach, too.
Who sang that song that you did?
What do you mean?
The Beatles.
Let's keep it that way.
Yeah, the Beatles. that's from their eponymous LP, Meet the Beatles.
Yeah, I know. I just had to set up the joke.
Yeah, I got it. Yeah. Hey, good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker.
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
And I understand you got caught in rush hour traffic this evening.
Yes, that wasn't fun. My boss was playing his usual Friday afternoon avoid Carol, so maybe I don't have to pay her. Didn't work.
Good for you. Didn't work. Good.
Yeah, because he wasn't expecting me to be sitting at his house when he got home. I am nothing if not tenacious.
I'm surprised not to see Barbie this evening.
I don't know where she is. I haven't heard from her today yet.
I thought, are you not your Barbie's keeper?
I am my Barbie's keeper, but every once in a while she gets away from me. I had a rather busy day today.
Understandable. Any Cletus sightings or anything? Any fun?
Well, no Cletus sightings, but the one piece of news that I actually had to lay my eyes upon today involved that bow-tied butt monkey, Tucker Carlson.
Oh, God, yeah, I saw that. Go, Carol, go.
And I was just pissed at men all day today. It all started out where Mayor de Blasio gave a press conference about the infrastructure program that the president laid out. And naturally, Tucker Carlson's Daily Caller managed to completely mischaracterize Mayor de Blasio's comments. So a lady that worked in the mayor's office wrote, I thought, a perfectly nice email to the author of that article, and it just said, your story on Mayor de Blasio and the USCM is totally inaccurate. The mayor said that $50 billion in flat funding was not enough, and cited the president's $80 billion proposal is one that boosted funding to adequate levels. The transcript is on NewYorkCity.gov. So he wrote back, Amy, based on what's in the transcript, I have to respectfully disagree with your assessment. The mayor called the Obama's plan an ideal reference point and talked about following the president's vision, but never said $80 billion was adequate. Indeed, his claim was that we're going to push for the highest number attainable. Clearly, this implies that the mayor would gladly accept an even higher figure. That impression is further reinforced by his response to the question about exact dollar amounts, where he said, we're all working on that together, indicating that the task force has not endorsed any specific figure. She wrote back, this is simply wrong. Watch the video and you'll see the context. And most importantly, I'm telling you now, as a mayoral spokesperson, that they were highlighting the president's plan as an ideal reference point for what the funding should be. So please, correct your story now. Whereupon, this misogynist wrote back, he said, damn it, I had these all in order. He said, he essentially told her that she needed to stop, that if he got another whining email from her, that he was going to mute the thread, and he wouldn't listen to her anymore. So he said, we're reviewing the video now, Amy. If you annoy me with another whiny email before then, I'm muting this thread, thanks. She rightly sent an email to Tucker Carlson. She said, Tucker, it's pretty appalling that this is how your staff chooses to respond to us requesting a basic correction and providing a transcript directly contradicts the story. Whereupon Tucker Carlson, the Jeremy, thanks for your email. You believe our story was inaccurate and have demanded a correction. Totally fair. We're going over the transcript now. What Bedford complained about was your tone, which I have to agree was whiny and annoying. And I say that in the spirit of helpful correction rather than a criticism. Outside of New York City, adults generally write polite, cheerful emails to one another. Even when asking for corrections, something to keep in mind the next time you communicate with people who don't live on your island. Best, Tucker. Well, Tucker thought that this was such a great put-down. He decided to blind carbon copy his brother, Buckley Carlson.
Buckley? Really? Where? Buckley?
Buck. Oh, yeah. Tucker and Buckley.
I wonder who he was named for.
And Carlson. I'm not even going to go there yet.
I understand. Yet.
Buckley writes back to his brother, great response, whiny little self-righteous bitch. Appalling? And with such an ironic name, too. Spitalnik? Ironic. You just... No chance this girl's ever had a pearl necklace. Spoojneck? I don't think so. More like labia face.
What?
Buckley. Except... Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, except Buckley Carlson has not figured out the fine nuances of email.
Oh, wait. I want to guess. I want to guess.
Go ahead.
He hit reply all.
Ding, 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 ding. Whereupon Amy got this email. So, the email sent from Buckley Carlson to his brother and to Spitalnik appears to have been a response to Tucker's snide comment. So, in response to a request for comment from BuzzFeed News, Tucker Carlson said, I just talked to my brother about his response, and he assures me he meant it in the nicest way.
And just, okay, just to review, what is the nicest way to describe someone as spoojneck?
Or labia face.
Oh, or labia
or
face.
Or saying that she has extreme dick fright. His brother is a sexist and a misogynist, but only the nicest kind. So I guess douchebaggery runs in their family.
Well, does Buckley wear a bow tie, too? Maybe it's cutting off the air supply?
I don't know if it's a whole family of bow-tied butt monkeys, but anybody with a nerdy name like Buckley. Buckley, Carl, Tucker.
Well, see, I mean, if he was a good hillbilly or a good redneck, he'd just be Buck. And that's not quite so nerdy, but one gets the sense that he could never actually be a buck.
No. And I just thought, you know, is there an apology in there anywhere? Are we a country now who just says the most evil, mean, cutting shit, and then we just assume that the recipients of this nastiness are just such thin bitches.
Folks, happy birthday, Devin. I have to say that I think that that might be the case.
Well,
I mean, there's less of an apology there than Gordon Klingenschmidt offered up.
Exactly. I mean, hey, I'm the first one to admit I was raised by wolves, but I somehow seem to have loved that. I was so angry when I read that, and I thought, not even an apology. In the first place, they wrote a piece that was absolutely... I worked for Congressman Ike Skelton and did a lot of his media work. And a lot of my job was involving correcting things that were media that were blatantly untrue. And I have to tell you, I think that she was very polite about it. She just said, it's wrong, and I have proof that it's wrong, and here you go. And then, no. Well, I'm going to say that he implied. You can't assume what he implied. Here is exactly what he said. It's in the record. It's in the written record. It's on tape. Here it is. And for that, she's whining. And she's a whiny bitch. With Dick Fright.
And what pray tell is that? I mean, Dick Fright. I mean, are there parades? Does this have anything of being afraid of the parade? Or I'm lost. I mean, it's
Tucker,
getting confusing.
Tucker was mansplaining to Amy how to be a little bit more deferential when she's speaking to a man. And so he had to share that little, and his brother just thought he'd just take it to a whole new level. I've always thought Tucker Carlson was an asshole. I just never realized he was the admiral of the Jewish Armada.
Oh, yeah, with Dick Leaf Clusters.
You know, when your douchiness won't fit, and when you have so much douchiness that it won't fit in the douche canoe, it won't even fit in the douche barge.
Or the douche freighter.
Or the douche freighter.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, at this point, we're talking about a douche knot. Not a dreadnought, but a douche knot.
You have definitely become the admiral of the douche armada. And I didn't know what to say about it. And I'm like, And then I'm watching this poor senator in, I think, Arizona explain how ungodly awful the fiasco is when they won't even discuss. This was a lady who was raped in the military, became pregnant, had an abortion, and she's sitting there spilling her guts. And some asshole is sitting there laughing while she's telling the story. And this is how, in our patriarchal society, we now think that elected politicians can treat women and how the media can treat women. And then we wonder why everyday guys treat women that way.
It's systemic, and it's institutional,
yeah,
and it's personal.
It was. Go ahead.
It seems like so much of this just comes from these stupid Abrahamic religions. I mean, they've been denigrating women since they took the power back. It goes way back.
It just makes me think everything that I fought for all those years was a lie. I thought men got it. I thought men understood that we were building a better country when we did it as Americans, when we did it as men and women and white and black, and we were all inclusive.
Well, I think that we made some progress in that direction in the 60s and 70s, but the rise of radical right-wing religion kind of wiped it out.
Well, the rise of Reagan. I mean, we keep coming
back
to...
That's the same thing, yeah.
Well, it is, Carol, but by the same token, it's not. Because one of the things that's noteworthy is that Reagan was not particularly religious.
No. I don't ever remember him being religious.
It's not like he was going in and out of church every Sunday.
Let's go to church, Mommy. I don't ever remember that.
But he brought all the retards with him, the people in his administration and George H.W., who was the actual president.
Well, and that was the rise of moral majority. When Jerry Falk started.
Two carols. Until the mindset of the country change or the world changes, looks like we're just going to see a further shift into this conservative mindset, and it shocks me too. But
well, that's just fine, and I keep telling myself that the pendulum has to swing back, but until it does, the first son of a bitch that talks to me like that better be wearing a goddamn cup.
Now what did this? I came in the middle of this discussion. What did this person say to a woman or say
podcast,
to you?
Podcast, Larry.
Okay.
I'll send you the link.
Okay.
Since he feels empowered and privileged enough to make sport of another human being's name, I think it is only fair to note, as Ron and Raleigh pointed out, his full name is Buckley Swanson Peck Carlson.
It's what?
Buckley Swanson Peck Carlson. Peck. Peck, as in pecker. You know, people who live in glass houses and all of that, right?
Carlson. Yeah.
Buckley Swanson Blech Carlson.
And his brother, the bow-tied butt monkey.
And by the way, my apologies. We were apparently off air for a little bit. I don't know what happened with the server, but we are back now. So, hallelujah, glory.
That's okay. I was just swearing.
Don't these people that get on the radio or fashion themselves as being pundits understand that they are putting themselves in a position to influence and persuade and educate people without a license? They're not, and that they're being irresponsible. And, you know, I mean,
I think that's sort of the point. Larry.
It's also a matter of privilege, isn't it, Carol? You don't say things like this jackass said. You don't say the things that Chappy Klingenschmidt said without you feel like you are privileged to say so. And by the way, I've been neglectful again. Let me bring Kevin on. Hey, Kevin.
Good evening.
How in the world are you? Do you have Bill with you this evening?
Yep. Of course.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
I just got a bad case of the Klingenschmidt.
Yeah. So,
can you clear that up with KFC?
That and a little turpentine if you're out. You can also take care of your Klingenschmidt with a good swaller of Epsom salts water. Right through like a goose.
Corn cobs work too, from what I've heard.
Well, if you have to get down to the point where you're scouring them, absolutely.
Yeah, it's been that guy is out of his mind, and the people who elected him are worse. And
now they're running around saying, well, you know, he doesn't speak for me. You voted for him? Yes, he does.
Yep. Exactly right.
Anybody want to hear a Reagan quote about God?
Sure.
Okay, here goes. He said this in, okay, I'm having a little technical difficulty. 1 second. Come on. Here it is. Oh. One moment, please. I'm almost there. I'm back now. Okay. Here goes. He said this on August 23rd, 1984. Quote. Oh, I should say, open quote. Without God, there is no virtue because there is no prompting of the conscience.
Without God, we're mired in the material, that flat world that tells us only what the senses perceive. Without God, there is a coarsening of the society, and without God, democracy will not and cannot long endure. If we ever forget that we're one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under, close quote.
Now, in honor of Willie Nelson's reserve, replace God with pot, and that statement might be more true.
Well, what I do is just replace it with dog.
I like Kevin's idea better.
No, you try to, you know, if you ship that stuff across state lines,
well,
you know, it could be a problem.
No, what they'll do is they'll find a strain or two or three strains that they like, and they'll grow it in each state where it's legal, because it'll all be done greenhouse and hydroponic anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all you got to do is, like Colorado here, it's legal. You just become a distributor, quote unquote, for his reserve, and you're the legal seller of it.
Because nobody's going to buy Willie Nelson's Old West Ditchweed.
Nope.
Well, I was in a distribution business myself at one point, and I was distributing to doctors and nurses that worked at the hospital that my first wife worked in. And I could sell half of it, and I'd have enough to smoke the next 3 months myself, you know, and get my money back.
Well, that's the way it works down on the Amway end of the spectrum, isn't it?
Yep. Well, that's a racket, too. Didn't that come out of a certain area of Michigan that is really a strange bunch of Dutch Reformed that make it ring any bells with you, Bob? Dutch Reformed Church?
Dutch Reformed does, but I don't know what the history of that is. But I was mentioning it only from the standpoint of, you know, if you're way down on the ultimate ultimate end of the distribution chain, that's the whole idea. You sell half and keep half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Amway was set up that way. That's a racket. And the other stuff, I like the stuff to say the food in, you know, the brand name, but because it works real well and it keeps the food fresh, you know, for you. But it's amazing, some of these health aides I have, they look at the stuff and they say, "What is that?" And I said, "Never mind." You know, they buy the stuff that the dollar store sells. That half the time we don't know what we're putting in our mouths anyway. So, I'm sitting right in front of a big jug of a root beer, ginger ale from Detroit. Werner's ginger ale, which was...
Oh, Werner's, yeah.
Yeah, we all got that when we were sick, you know. Drink some ginger ale, you'll feel better in the morning, you know.
But you know, Werner's isn't really a true ginger ale, because there's a little vanilla something going on in there, too, isn't there?
Yep. I'm surprised that you can still get it, but I was listening to a Detroit radio station, and they happened to mention it, and I said, I'll be damned.
Well, the one thing I still missed out on, I got to go up to Boston a few years ago and got to meet Lottie, and bless his heart, he was going to send me home with some Moxie, but I couldn't get it on the plane.
Yeah.
And that's, I still haven't tasted Moxie.
Yeah, they use that word a lot in Mad Magazine, that word Moxie. It makes you have some backbone or some guts or intestinal fortitude or whatever you want. But, you know, talking about women, you know what they did to women in China in the old days?
Foot binding?
Foot binding, yeah. It seems that no matter where you go, if you're female or somebody's going to dominate you, think they do. I got along well with women just by, well, you do what you want to do, you know. I don't have the answers, that's for damn sure. If I had the answers, I wouldn't be stuck by the questions if I can't figure out myself if I had all the answers, you know? But go ahead, somebody talk. I've said enough for a while.
Well, I'll jump in here for a second.
Do please, Roger.
Okay, thank you very much for the message you gave me. My ground has this beautiful green fuzz on it that I'll get tilled in, which is the first crop of weeds, which will make everything a little bit nicer. And I already have six quarts of asparagus pickles made this year.
Oh, my God.
I just got done with, this is kind of bullshit stuff, but I'm having a problem kneeling down, and now I got bone spurs in my knees, so I'm not quite sure how much farming I'm going to do this year.
Ow, damn.
Yeah. But things are going along just fine here on the North Coast, and getting back into that marijuana discussion. The problem ain't growing it. The problem's getting rid of it if you're trying to do a medical marijuana thing. Every grower that I recycle potting soil for is having a hard time selling.
How come?
Huge glut on the market.
Ah, well, yeah, the classic economic problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that good old capitalism number kind of has bit the back end of a whole bunch of people. And now I'll jump over to Ronald Reagan. His problem was that he's the one that instituted no-fault divorce in California because he had a hell of a time getting rid of his first wife. Somebody had to plead guilty to adultery. So he changed over to no-fault divorce. And although the right-wing fundamentalists love to put him up on a pedestal, I somehow have this feeling that the real gung-ho crap had to do with him initiating no-fault divorce, and that created the window for the right-wing nut job fundamentalist liberty-toting assholes to get their foothold.
Well, his first wife was a movie actress, wasn't she? I can't remember her name now.
Yeah, Jane Wyman was right.
Yeah.
That was a bumper sticker popular in California for a while. Jane Wyman was right, and that one relates to Jane Wyman got rid of his ass.
Well, I heard him doing an old radio show yesterday where he was a semi-villain, and my health aide's listening to it. Says, that's President Reagan, isn't it? That's, yeah, that's what he did before he,
Yeah, before he wrecked the country.
His second wife was a very right-wing woman whose father was big in some kind of a business or the other. From what I've heard or read, because people were sending me stuff from California that just in the 1960s I was hearing what a son of a bitch this guy was.
Well, he was president of the Screen Actors Guild, very pro-union, and all the rest of that. And then he met up with Nancy. And Nancy's father was the one that kind of took him under the wing and said, man, you ain't never going to make any money if you stay being a liberal Democrat. You have to come over and be a conservative Republican, and I'll help you out. And that was what propelled him into the governor's mansion, where he attacked the education system, the higher education system in California, because he didn't want all those goddamn long-haired hippies. Why should we be paying the tuition for all those long-haired hippies to be out on the street protesting against us and those labor people who don't have any problems finding a new job, so they'll go on strike. So we have to kill the unions and cut the funding to the state colleges and make students so poor that they have to not be out in the street protesting what we right-wingers want to do. And
yeah,
a whole lot of
going to school there. The price was pretty low
Reagan
out
Democrats
there at one time.
Went along with it.
Oh,
the pro-Vietnam War Democrats flocked to Reagan because in the 60s, the college students were protesting the war. And by God, we can't have them out in the streets protesting the war. Let's make college more expensive. Let's start the war on drugs, because we know they're all just long-haired, dope-smoking hippies. And screwed the country.
Yep. He was a... Well, and then the power structure, they liked the guy. He was a... He had the... He had a, you know, he was an actor. And a bad one, maybe in the, you know, in the hand. As far as anybody voting for Oscars, he wouldn't get one. But, the long, the greasy-haired movie. Who was that, Bob? You have a name for the guy that...
Yeah, that greasy-haired B-movie actor.
Yeah,
if you ever want to see early Reagan, track down the 20 Mule Team Borax Death Valley days.
I remember seeing those reruns when I was a kid. They'd... I guess it cost nothing to run them, and the home channel of our little cable company would run them constantly. And it was atrocious.
Yeah.
Well,
and he's also the one that got behind the nuclear power industry, was a spokesman for General Electric, and telling us that we really need to embrace nuclear power because electricity will be so cheap. We don't have to meter it.
How'd that work out?
Great, until the nuclear power plants lost their ass and couldn't get insurance and cost a... Don't get me started on nuclear power. It takes 20... When you build a nuclear power plant, it will take 20 years to generate enough electricity to compensate for the fossil fuel energy that went into building the plant and refining the fuel to make the electricity. So it will not even break even for 20 years. And theoretically, they have a 25-year lifespan. Now, the decommissioning of a nuclear power plant, which has yet to be successfully completed, costs more than the original building. So even if the plant went for 40 years, it's a net zero gain over burning fossil fuel. That's how it worked out.
They built one within sight of where I was living. I was living on the shores of Lake Erie, believe me. And you could look east and see the damn towers from this... I can't remember the name of the plant now, but they talked about how we'd have to evacuate if the things went to hell. Well, hell, you couldn't get from where I lived to the damn mall looking at the traffic jams. I wonder what it was going to be like when everybody was running for your life.
Chernobyl and Fukushima are both perfect examples of how disastrous nuclear power is. Chernobyl...
Yep.
I mean, they haven't even started to clean up Chernobyl yet. They just abandoned the entire area and everything around it. And virtually everybody that went in to put that cement cap on is already dead.
Oh, meanwhile, speaking of nuclear disasters, I saw a story.
How do you clean up? Sorry. How do you clean up something that if you go in to try and clean it up, it'll kill you?
You don't.
Yeah, see, you really don't. A British firm has finally developed some means of sending some sort of robotic device into the Fukushima reactors because it had been thought impossible, but they have. They've gotten in there and gotten a look, and they confirmed that, yes, in at least two of the reactors, it went all the way core on the floor.
Well, there's a company in down near Ukiah, California, between Healdsburg and Ukiah, called Retech. And that company has been there for 25, 30 years. And one of the things they were working on back 25 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, was robotic work to go into nuclear power plants to grind away the interior of the cement containment vessel and haul that out and all do it robotically, because once you fire up the generator, that containment vessel, the cement is now radioactive contaminated and will have to be disposed of in some fashion. But nobody knows what fashion it's going to get disposed of, but they have been working on robots that are capable of doing this kind of work. And they're still in business down there. I don't know what else they're doing, but I know that was one of the things they were working on.
This was a British firm, but it's kind of horrifying.
Well, I'm not saying that Retech isn't part of that British firm.
Right, right.
I don't know the
no, this it was some, but the name was something close to that. Let me see if I can find the story real quick, because you know, ultimately the engineering firm apparently drilled holes in the top of the reactor building itself, and I'm thinking, wow, that must have been a great idea. Let me see here.
Hey, Roger, what'd they do with Humboldt Bay after they closed it?
It's still sitting there. They've torn down virtually everything that they can. The reactor vessel is still there. The used fuel rods are still there. And there's no way and no place to do anything with the highly contaminated residue. So it's being what's called safe store on site.
Yes.
Every nuclear power plant in the country is like that.
Actually, there was one.
Well, I used to work in them, so I've got a little insight on it.
There was one somewhere on the Mississippi that they were going to decommission, and it was going to be the test case for decommissioning, and everybody was kind of interested in how they were going to deal with it, and they finally figured out the best thing to do was to load it on a barge, run it down to Mississippi, run it through the Panama Canal, run it up the Columbia River, and bury it in Hanford, Washington. And they never did decommission, really, truly decommission it.
Well, the oldest nuclear power plant in the country is in a little town called Jenkinsville, South Carolina. It was the first experimental unit. It was really small. And it's still there where it was the last time I was there.
Humboldt Bay, it's either the first nuclear plant in California or the first commercial nuclear plant in the country.
No, that one was in South Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah, it was at some point venture. It was really small, like, I don't know, 10 megawatt or something. It wasn't very big.
Well, they built at Humboldt Bay from the elementary school, you can see the power plant, and the milk from the cows that were in the pasture around the elementary school, the milk ended up not being usable because of the strontium 90 in the milk.
I'm sitting here looking at Humboldt Bay on Google Earth. What part of the bay is that on?
Fine Fields Landing.
I mean,
it's south of Eureka.
Okay.
Real close to a town called Fields Landing.
Okay, I see Fields Landing.
Okay. And that Fields Landing go just a little bit south of that. And there's still a power plant there, but it's now natural gas and diesel.
To put a little perspective on how much concrete is in that containment building, they're 4 feet thick. And they've got a lot, I mean, they're just full of steel rebar. And the inside of it has like a half-inch steel liner that actually is on the inside. Because when they start powering the unit back up after an outage, it's kept under a negative pressure all the time. So there's actually an airlock you have to go through to get in and out when they're pulling it down. It was kind of neat work, but, you know.
And theoretically filtering all the air so there's no radioactivity that gets out.
Well, yeah, if you keep it under a negative pressure, then.
I found the story coming out of Fukushima. The UK firm is called it's a system called Envisage by a company called Createc, C-R-E-A-T-E-C. And they've got a camera system for robots that detects and draws a 3D map of high radiation locations that can't be accessed by human workers.
And the one down there by Healdsburg, Ukiah, is R-E-T-C-H. And the only reason I know about that is when I was driving the moving van, I moved somebody in there, and while I'm moving furniture in and out of his house as a nuclear worker, he was telling me that he was going to work there to work on the robotics to decommission nuclear power plants.
Well, it is. They are certainly. They're seeing. Well, among other things, they've discovered the source of the water leaks.
Well, that's nice. Now plug the son of a bitch.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah.
Speaking of, has anybody bothered to check the internet? Because I haven't. Has anybody heard what Alex Jones is saying about the downing of this airliner in the Alps? What wild theory he's come up with yet?
Oh, I'm sure.
Do
we even have to go? I'm sure it was a false flag operation. But speaking of Alex Jones, Robert in Morgantown put me on to a story earlier today, and I'd seen it a couple of other places. Do you remember what was her name, Carol? Virginia Ellifors?
Virginia Ellison?
Yeah, the woman who was losing her mind in South Carolina, well, not was losing, wrong verb tense, had completely lost her mind. Yeah.
I think it was Ellisor.
Yeah. It turns out that apparently here in the fairly near future, we're going to have a cottage industry in... And, of course, all right-wing paranoia is a cottage industry. But we're going to have a cottage industry in Barack Obama trying to start nuclear war. Robert sent this along to me, and I'd seen it earlier. It comes from a website called Your News Wire. News. Truth. Unfiltered. This might be the first real serious hockey puck warning of the evening. Y'all ready for this? Top U.S. commander under arrest for refusing to fire nukes at Russia. And the thing is, you read this stuff, and you can tell by the ads that are on there that it's real right-wingy. But remember, Virginia Ellifors was screaming because a communist dictator tried to detonate a nuclear device on Charleston, South Carolina. Right? Well, these things don't happen by accident. And so, consequently, what we have here is the developing, and you'd love to know where this stuff starts. Who sits down somewhere and has the leisure time to say, hey, let's create an outbreak of paranoia over Barack Obama going to nuke somebody. I mean, it almost sounds like something that those fine, upstanding, God-fearing, patriotic Americans at the CIA or the NSA would do, you know? But I'm sure they never would, right?
Hey, but Bob, you left out the fact that it was a coordinated attack with Barack Obama and Great Britain.
Well,
combined,
yeah,
to
and,
do it.
And what I've got here is, according to Russian news sources, who go more or less unidentified, nuclear war was averted by the heroics of Captain Heather E. Cole, who refused to communicate the launch authorization to U.S. nuclear forces. Apparently, that's always a good one. the U.S. was about to launch a limited nuclear strike on the Russian Federation on Monday. Now, this is two Mondays back, and somehow or another we all missed it, with a coordinated surprise attack by the U.K. It is stated that Captain Cole's actions were made possible. Notice it is stated, but we don't know who stated that Captain Cole's actions were made possible by the security measures put in place by former Defense Chief Chuck Hagel prior to his resignation. She is reportedly under arrest and has been relieved of her command. A news report circulating in the Kremlin today, prepared by the Foreign Intelligence Service for the Ministry of Defense, states that President Barack Obama's nuclear war communication commander has been arrested and relieved of her command after failing to transmit launch codes authorizing an atomic weapons first strike attack upon the Federation in coordination with a similar surprise attack planned by the United Kingdom.
Well,
Jesus.
Excuse me, but the thing about the president, they had the guy that carried the football for the president, doesn't the president have the final launch codes? In other words, a nuke can't be launched by anyone but the president, at least the first strike. That's what I've always been under the impression of.
There was
That's
a story
the way
of
always
that based. No. Go ahead.
What'd you say,
that's
Mark?
The way I've always heard it.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, I mean, yeah, this idea that Putin supposedly had put some of his nuclear weapons on standby for this stuff that's going on in, you know, the Russian breadbasket there, Ukraine, and the other section there, and the other place where they fought a war in 1860s, 1850s. I think Putin is just a small-time Stalin compared with, you know, what he was. But hell, I'd rather have stability. We want stability within reason any way you can get it. It's with this kind of weaponry, you just don't want, you know, war glorifiers to the point where they think they can get away with that crap. That's nuts. By the way, the name of the plant they built close to me was, in those days, when I lived in my county, was Perry Nuclear Plant. And the guys who were working on it, they all had nosebleeds, and they were selling stainless steel belt buckles made from the pipes that, you know, that for some way or other didn't work right. And I just hope they were good welders, that's all. Just hope to God they knew how to weld, because that, you know. And I used to look up and see the damn stuff on my house and say, what the hell did they build that there for? But that's the end of my discourse on this.
Well, I find this story fascinating because there are just enough tantalizing little details to give you maybe an idea of where it comes from. Let's see. This is fun. Captain Cole was arrested Tuesday, 17 March, relieved of her command, and then taken by armed guard to U.S. Naval Air Station Miramar in San Diego, where she remains incommunicado. The SVR, in their report on Captain Cole's refusal to start World War III, further states that her actions mirror those of Soviet naval captain Vasily Arkhipov, who during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962 also refused to obey orders to launch nuclear weapons against the United States.
That's bull. Pure bull.
Let's see. No, there's another. Oh, here it is. SVR experts in this report explain the critical failure in this instance was an added security measure ordered by the former U.S. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel prior to his being forced out of office last month over his refusal to have any part in this attack against Russia. So it begins to look more and more like this is, you know, this is agitprop coming out of the Kremlin.
I don't know. I don't think so. The man's got enough trouble. I don't think he wants a nuclear war either. You won't have much of a job left, would you, Bob?
Wouldn't have much of a planet left, really.
Yep. Well, that the guy that you talked about, the guy that has that right-wing news mongering, that guy is a son of a bitch. Excuse my nasty language, but he's just a bastard. There's nothing I can say about that guy. How much money is he making off of that crap that he's pushing, Bob? Is he doing well?
It's hard to know.
Well, he's probably got a sideline going. He's selling Swedish mattresses and a few other items, you know.
Well, he's got a great cottage industry in the emergency food business.
Yeah.
Sell you 90 meals for $100 or something like that. It's supposed to last you 3 months. That kind of thing. Stuff that we got, sea rats in the service, stuff like that. Big business. Speaking of which, I wanted to mention there's been a great series on Alternate this week about how fear, and you've talked about it a lot, Bob, but how fear is being sold to the American people and how the American people respond to fear messages, I guess you'd say. But nothing we don't know already, but, you know, it was a pretty good series by Alternate describing how it's used, how almost all products sold are based on fear. Use this deodorant because you won't smell bad in front of others. That kind of thing. And if you think about it, it's true.
Yeah. And just to let folks know, for some reason or another, the Skype group just crapped out, and we're trying to get it back.
Okay. I was wondering why they were, so quiet, because there's too much knowledge over there for them to be that quiet.
Oh, and by the way, thanks going out to Mo Liberal in the chat room who jumped in with Thomas. We are now done with fundraising for this evening, and anything else will keep us going into next week. We've got 3 days of March remaining, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and that is, Monday, Tuesday. Hang on, let me look here. I'm losing my mind. Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is the first. We got 2 days remaining, so that's $300 to raise. And it'd be fun to stay out in front if anybody wants to help us do that. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, and it's really quite easy to use. I did not, however, give out the mailing address earlier. It is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. And checks and money orders, as always, should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable to The Horn, so that Boss Man Wayne can deal with them simply, easily, and quickly.
Well, they got us there, and he worked it out right this year, because April 1st is on a, what, Wednesday?
Yep.
Fool's Day. Yeah, it'll work well on that Wednesday. Any luck with the group?
We're trying now.
Hey,
are we back?
Yeah. My machine hiccuped or something.
Oh, well. Okay. Well, that's kind of rare.
Hey, Bob?
Yes.
I have a sort of a public service announcement I wanted to make.
Oh, do please.
It's come to my attention that there is a bill in the House that's been introduced to repeal the Patriot Act. It's known as H.R. 1466, and I wanted to reach out to the Horn family to basically contact your Congress critter and not only get them to vote this thing, but to see if they'll co-sponsor it. I've done so with my representative. It's H.R. 1466. And it goes into the FISA court, all kinds of things. It's a nice little reform.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah.
Thanks, Grant.
Yeah, and if to call Congress, if you don't have a number, you can dial 202-225-3121 and just ask for your rep's name, and they'll pipe you right through to your rep. But I looked it up. And this is, I think, the best shot we've got at getting our Fourth Amendment rights back. So I wanted to bring that to the Horn family's attention.
And it's interesting. It was introduced by Representative Mark Pocan, or Pocan, P-O-C-A-N, who is a Democrat from Wisconsin's 2nd Congressional District.
That's right. So everybody get on your Congress critters and get them to co-sponsor H.R. 1466.
Too bad it's Friday afternoon at 5:21 p.m. I can't.
It's always Monday. We have time. It's only been introduced. But it's a good time to write it down, do it Monday, whatever. And let's see if we can get some real passion behind this, because I think with the right push, it'll happen. I just suspect. There's a lot of people kind of pulling back from the police state, I think, right, left, and center. So...
Well, it's not too late. You can send a shitload of emails between now and Monday.
That's true.
Absolutely.
I usually follow up an email with a phone call. I just want, for double coverage. I just crawled all up and down Senator Wyden for his TPP support. A lot of people in Oregon are pissed off at Ron Wyden.
Yeah, well... I was reading an article by Jack Erasmus that made it seem that he was representing that Obama, the Democrats, and the Republicans have this perfect storm going, although he didn't use that language, and maybe I'm not using the term perfect storm properly. But what I'm intending to say is that everybody is behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership passing out. I mean, he's got almost unanimous support from everybody. I don't know what I'm missing, but that's what seems to be happening.
Last I checked, my other senator, Merkley, is not into it. He's the major. I don't think it's everybody. I think they've got a big push because Republicans love corporations. Orrin Hatch has been basically seducing Ron Wyden and getting him into a bipartisan measure, to fast track.
Oh, God.
Yeah, doesn't that make your fucking stomach turn? Anyway, that's what they're basically going to bill it as, a bipartisan effort to screw the country, So anyway, I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. H.R. 1466 on the domestic front. And definitely crawl up and down on Ron Wyden about the TPP. He shouldn't be supporting that. We already got groups in Oregon here. We're starting to recruit senatorial candidates, and we're going to primary his ass. It's already started. There'll be a lobbyist someday.
The disability community.
If you're able to get into a... One of their field offices.
Oh man, they've been all over the place. They've been all over the place, and not only that, but they're following him around to all his fundraisers with a blimp, with a big sign on it against the TPP, and getting him to change his schedule, and he's dodging them, and all kinds of stuff's going on. Oregonians are pissed.
Well, then why doesn't he just say, "Look, okay, fine, I'm going to change my"?
Because I think the bribe is too high.
Like, whatever he's getting is must be sweet, because he's going against his own constituents. He's a stubborn cuss, too. When he makes up his mind on something like that, you know, when I guess once deals are made, he just doesn't seem to back down. He just goes all the way wrong if he goes wrong. He said, I could go on forever about wrong.
Speaking of politics, here's an interesting contrast of what we have to put up with here in the new United States. I just got a note from Robert in Australia. He said, we're having a state election here in New South Wales today. I'm about to walk up to my local public school and vote. The whole process should take no longer than 10 to 15 minutes, depending on the queues. An entire election season takes no more than 4 to 6 weeks after being called. Unlike other years, this election is pretty important for the future of Australia. The Liberal Party want to sell the New South Wales electricity grid, currently public-owned, to China. And when I say China, I mean a Chinese corporation that is owned by the Chinese government. Worse than that, it is the Liberal Party's determination to open up and expand fracking on the second driest continent on the planet, and we get so much sunlight, and they want to frack Great Artesian Basin, which provides the only reliable source of fresh water throughout much of inland Australia. Wreck that, and you can abandon most of inland Queensland, northern New South Wales, and northern SA, wait a minute, South Australia. Is that right, Carol? SA, South Australia? State? Fingers crossed.
Yes, that's right. SA, South Australia. Yeah. Yep.
Fingers crossed that the Liberal Party loses, because it'll reflect badly on Tony Abbott. So I think we know what Robert's going to. But isn't that a lovely idea, a campaign season that only lasts 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks? Voting, you just walk to the school, you vote, you're done, you're in, you're out, you're over, and you've done your patriotic duty, and, well, you know, it's further proof that, A, it can be done, and, B, anywhere that it isn't done, it's an indication that certain powerful parties don't want you voting.
Well, in this country, it's the people who sell the advertising who love these long election campaigns, because somebody is paying to advertise it in some way, shape, or form.
Well, right, and consider the wealth transfer involved in that. With, you know, we were talking about the Telecommunications Act of 1996 last night, and with that act, which allowed the consolidation of media into fewer and fewer hands, ultimately, it's wealth redistribution of political campaign donations into the hands of massive right-wing corporations. Hey, nifty, isn't that cool? You know, wealth distribution, the right-wing doesn't complain about it as long as the wealth is moving upward. But let it dribble downward a little bit, and, well, Jesus, you know, we're gonna be all awash in communism any day now with people just out there recklessly eating food.
Keep asking yourself, how much do these people have to control before they have any satisfaction out of living? They live more and more and more. Can't tell your song
and yet,
somebody had you.
That was the Andrea True connection.
Yeah.
But of course, more, more, more is something that they have yet to figure out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses.
Got a good Thanksgiving dinner day. More. And, of course, the next thing I was doing was snoring, you know, and wondering why did I eat that much, or Christmas parties, why did I drink that much? Jeez. What a way to bring in Christmas Day when you're watered. I remember one time I was so drunk, I came home from the office Christmas party, and I basically said hello to my mother, and she hit the bed, and that was it for me. Merry Christmas, Bill. Hello?
Yeah, I presume we're all here. Are we all here?
I'm here. Bill's here.
Hi. Did you lose me?
I don't know. Skype group, are you still here?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I thought I would mention that in light of the story that Carol brought us about crappy Republican behavior on the part of Tucker and Bucky Carlson. It's apparently a system-wide problem. I guess everybody heard the news that Harry Reid has declared that he's not going to run for re-election. He's 74 years old. He got busted up in a weightlifting accident at home. That's why he's wearing the covered up one eye, and he's all badly bruised and everything. He says that's not why he decided to, but he's not going to run. So, enter the Republican National Committee, of course, run by Rents Priebus. That sounds, which again sounds like something maybe you can put some borax on and take care of when your Priebus needs rinsed. But the RNC today released the following statement in response to Democrat leader Harry Reid announcing his retirement. This is from the Department of Stay Classy GOP. With the Democrat Party, and it's not Democrat, it's Democratics, with the Democrat Party already in disarray, a national committee struggling to raise money, and a scandal-plagued presidential frontrunner, it's no surprise Harry Reid realized he was about to suffer a humiliating defeat and decided to step aside. Nice people.
Well, that's Guy Priebus, I wonder where he hides his Iron Cross, you know? Okay, so.
It's just what I was thinking. Minister of Propaganda.
Exactly. You're right.
Look, Harry Reid is 74 years old. He's obviously not feeling well. The only scandals surrounding Hillary Clinton are trumped up ones that they're making up as they go along.
Right.
It's just horseshit. It's spin doctoring.
Well, I wouldn't vote for Harry Reid or I'm not sure how I'm going to vote in the presidential election. I don't think I'm happy with anybody that anybody could come up with in this day and age, because they're not going to come up with somebody as left as I'd like. So, you know, unless I can drum up the support of a few million people to support a progressive, cultural lefty or something that will decide to throw their hat in the ring. I don't know whether it's worth it at this point. Because whomever I choose, I'm going to get somebody who's going to be lukewarm to horrible.
But if it came down to a choice between Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz, you mean to tell me you wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton?
Well, I'd probably vote for Hillary Clinton, but I wouldn't do so enthusiastically.
No, I wouldn't either, but
if you don't try to balance it, just to take. Believe me, I thought when I voted for Lyndon Johnson, I was voting for peace. Yeah, a little peace here and a little peace there, the old joke.
Yeah.
I was so happy to beat Barry Goldwater, to defeat Goldwater. It was just, they had him painted pretty, but he was a guy who would go to war in those days quickly. I don't know how he felt toward the end of his career, Barry, but, just saw too much of that stuff in the. I worked for a guy who was giving out books. One was called None Dare Call It Treason. It was a Birch Society special.
Yeah, that was in my civics teacher's in the classroom. My civics teacher had it, but I can't remember who wrote it.
In 1964, Barry Goldwater was advocating using tactical nuclear weapons in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, that's a great example of it does make a difference. And I do worry about our progressive purists out there. And you know what scares me even more is if by some bizarre happenstance Rand Paul and that thing on his head should happen to be the nominee of the GOP, there's a whole bunch of people on the left who think that he's just the bee's knees. And in fact, I was reading an article not long back about the book that Ralph Nader came out with recently, in which he said, well, you know, progressives and libertarians could band together behind Rand Paul to stop the corporate state. And I'm thinking, Jesus, Ralph, is the Aricept not working anymore, buddy?
Libertarians don't say anything about the economic, about class. They don't say anything about stratification or inequality. They don't understand the influence of the economic system and the fact that there are, you know, and they don't critique capitalism. They call themselves socially liberal, but in every other way, they're just as conservative as the Republicans. So I don't know where he gets off saying that Rand Paul, where lefties get off liking the libertarians.
Oh, Rand Paul stood up against the drones. Even though he didn't.
But just his first name is enough.
Smoke dope and get laid.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that they understand the economic system or you know, class struggle or social inequalities or the impact of the economic system on society or vice versa. You know. Anybody can like to smoke dope and get laid.
Well, that's
freedom.
Like
I'm sorry, Carol.
Yeah.
Sorry. We all wanted smoke dope and get laid. But I think Rand Paul may have shit in his own nest. They may be recalling his libertarian card. He wants everybody in market to attend a tent revival meeting to counteract the gay.
The homosexual merge.
The hell did that come from, Randy?
Wait a second. Did he say that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yes.
I must not be paying. Well, I don't pay very much attention anyway. But I'm, you know, they're not. You know, libertarians aren't supposed to be pushing one religion over another. That's not part of libertarianism.
Well, no, but you combine libertarianism with Duck Dynasty assholes, and they want to go rape atheists.
Oh shit.
That's true. Yeah, here, this isn't a very long clip. Here's Rand Paul and that thing on his head. You know, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich, I'm comfortably well off, I'm socially secure. Here he is in his own words, as delivered to, of course, CBN.
Don't always look to Washington to solve anything. In fact, the moral crisis we have in our country, there is a role for us trying to figure out things like marriage. There's also a moral crisis that allows people to think that there would be some sort of other marriage. And so there's a role outside and inside government. But I think the exhortation to try to change people's thoughts also has to come from the countryside, from everywhere outside of Washington. In fact, we're the most disconnected city on the planet from the people, you know. So don't have a lot of faith in what's going on up here. Doesn't mean don't participate with us up here and try to make it better. Definitely do.
Wait a minute. Before we finish the clip, and there's just a little bit left, you know, there was a tell in there. This guy's a stoner. He is. Did you hear him say, you know? Oh, like, here. Oh, yeah, that's really good, you know? Yeah, absolutely. A little libertarian.
But realize, like every other problem, that, you know, I think, you know.
There it was again, you know.
I've said this before, we need a revival in the country, you know. We need another great awakening with tent revivals of thousands of people saying, you know, reform or see what's going to happen if we don't reform.
And there you have it, you know.
See, the shit just right itself.
He may have been stoned right there. He may have just been goofing on all those right wingers. But we all got to go to a tent revival. And damn it, I hate snake handling, and I don't particularly feel like I need a healing. But I guess we're going to have to do it in Rand Paul's Merca.
I've seen.
Wonder what kind of tent revival he was talking about. And I wonder if he meant the tent revival of the Christian fundamentalists. We're going to have to come
yes.
in. And
yes, yes, Larry, yes. That's what that's what tent revivals mean. Fundies.
Oh, okay, well,
you know,
I can see it in a little different metaphorical way. You have a tent revival of liberals and Jews and
No, there was no metaphor there, Larry. There was no metaphor. He said we need a tent revival like the Great Awakening. The Great Awakening.
Okay.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Oh, shit. Well, son of a bitch. Excuse my...
That's what I was thinking, Bob.
The son of a bitch. You know? I just said it. And I'm not a stoner.
Meanwhile, Steve in New York points out, Catholics don't have tent revivals. Well, you're gonna have to. Y'all are gonna have to come to it anyway, Steve. In Rand Paul's libertarian Merca.
Anyway, libertarianism was supposed to be the brainchild of some of these German economists like Friedrich Hayek and Ludwig von Mises, who I think my father took a course from back in the 40s, and Milton Friedman and all that. They didn't, and they basically said, we don't want to have any mixed economy. We don't want to have any social welfare state. And so we don't have that stuff. But then everybody can, and we're not going to have any wars.
And the free market will cure all social ills.
The free market will cure everything. But they don't take into consideration, I think I mentioned this about 7 minutes ago, they don't understand class struggle. They don't understand the gap between rich and poor. They don't understand
racism. It's not that they don't understand it, Larry. They don't think it exists. It's a faith-based political and economic system. They don't believe in it, therefore it doesn't exist. It isn't real and need not be considered.
It's kind of like Cappy saying that America's being judged by this woman who literally had her baby cut out of her womb by a crazy woman wanting the baby. And they truly believe that. And because they believe that, they believe that you're disabled because you just don't have enough faith to be healed. It's that kind of thing. They don't accept reality as it is. They want to accept reality as they see it. And there's nothing but their reality. Anything else doesn't exist.
Yeah, I understand that, Kevin. And some of those people would say that about me, that I have my reality and I believe in it, and there's no other reality but mine equally. But because I believe what I believe, and and I'm seeing whatever I think reality is, then that, so it's anyway, what I said doesn't make a bit of sense, but that's because I live in this culture, and I've been ponderized. So
but the original Grange movement was a very progressive organization.
Yep.
Of small family farms that wanted social equality. They were tired of being the poor people down the dirt and the rich suckers that were dealing with the railroads and stealing them blind in the wholesale and retail market for their products. And now the Grange is a right-wing conservative pile of crap.
Yeah.
Well, at Tarrant County Fair, they used to sell good food, but that's about all I know about. I mean, what they are today is not what they used to be.
There was a...
We still have a Grange right here in McKinleyville, and they keep inviting me to come to it because I'm a little farmer, blah, blah, blah. And everybody in that Grange that I've talked to about anything political, they all think Ronald Reagan and George Bush were fantastic. And that goddamn half-breed Kenyan that's in the White House is a pile of shit. And eat breakfast with them or lunch with them or eat dinner with them or go to a meeting with a bunch of people that...
Yeah, but Roger, what did they get out of Reagan and Bush and those right wingers that makes them think that these guys
fuzzy feelings?
Yeah, well, they were told they were exceptional, Larry, and they loved it. They wanted to hear that.
Yeah,
and
right.
By God, those long haired hippie assholes that come look for mushrooms on my property ought to be shot.
Oh boy. Well, from what I understand, there are some pretty nasty characters in Humboldt that have pretty much become like mafia figures. The growers, some of them. Not all of them, but some of them.
Wherever there's that kind of money, you're going to find that kind of activity. That's why we need to legalize it and get rid of those people.
Amen.
You're talking about the people that are cutting down mountaintops to steal water out of streams and Mexican mafia that are doing all that, but the vast majority of people I deal with that are growing, they got anywhere from 50 to 100 plants in a little room in their house, and they're just trying to make a little bit of a living.
Okay. I understand those people exist too. But
a hell of a lot more of them than there are the ones that are toting AK-47s.
Yeah, because I just have a friend from personal experience that had to deal, had some property up there and had to deal with some pretty rough characters, apparently. And I said, I thought these people were all just growing dope and they're just really mellow people and they just sort of do whatever they do and it's really cool. And he said, that used to be the case. It isn't the case anymore.
You're confusing the back to the land hippies of the late 60s and early 70s. With the Mexican mafia of the 2010 to 2015.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that for me.
Tim from L.A. wants to know what a Grange is. Should I tell him, Roger, or you want to do it?
You go for it. I've talked enough.
The Grange is like a farmer social club that formed back in the days when everybody was farming and ranching, we had a meeting place to go to. They still have one down here around Corning somewhere, I think.
It was a social club. Once a month, the farmers got together and could introduce their daughters to the sons and get together for a potluck dinner and figure out who needed to raise a barn and all that kind of stuff. And it was farmers helping farmers and push a social agenda that would help farmers.
Did you ever see the movie Oklahoma? Because that is like what a Grange would look like, is the farmers and the cattlemen and everybody getting together and trying to work things out and building a stronger community, helping each other.
For mutual benefit.
Yeah.
Socialism for farmers.
Oh, he talks.
I had oral surgery done, so I can't speak very well.
Okay.
Doing fine, Tim. We hope you are pain free.
No pain. Just can't talk. My mouth is bloody.
Yeah, the farmers would be held up by the railroads. The Grange, everybody would be held up by the railroads. Were the oil companies of their day is what they were. They controlled this, that, and you name it. And I talked to Bob Frank Baum, the author, how when they were pulling oil out of the ground in Pennsylvania, and Standard Oil, John D. Rockefeller's oil concern, was telling the railroads not to haul other people's oil. And Baum got in on that one. And, because he's quite the man when you read his biography. He was quite interested in a lot of things. Women's suffrage, he was very big on that. So anyway, that's my two-bit history here.
This was about who? I'm sorry, Bill, I missed. You were talking about it.
Frank Baum.
Oh, Fred Baum, okay.
Frank.
The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay.
Another one of his books, there were some guys that had their flatheads. Everybody had their brain in a can, and the can was attached to your belt, because in the flathead, they couldn't get the can of brains in there. But the guy comes along, he's the Sudic, S-U-D-I-C. He goes around stealing everybody's can of brains. That was one of his books. I think it was The Road to Oz, which I owned a lot of that stuff and gave it to my daughter because, actually, you know, my grandchildren were young at the time. Let them give them this stuff to read, you know. But that's another story, you know. Because I had all those things that came out in the 50s. He only wrote about 8 books. And then his granddaughter started writing, and because he was dead by 1910, I would bet you. But he had all these different social ideas that were, how the people, Bob and I were talking about people crawling through the poppy field. Well, right now, this whole country has a lot of people crawling through the poppy field to call heroin, so I've seen a lot of that come up with sons and daughters of friends of mine. I've seen them get involved with that stuff. I could have, but I just didn't trust myself enough.
Heroin brought to you by Bayer. They came up with aspirin and heroin at the same time, declared them both to be safe and highly effective, and then decided to put their marketing money behind aspirin.
Good. Well, those do work. They'll still work on a hangover for me. I don't get them anymore, though. Unfortunately, I kind of miss them occasionally. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff that happened in this. The poppy fields that he wrote about. Who was it? Dashiell Hammett with different things that were going on. Border crossings in Arizona. There was border crossing going on like crazy in those days. It's nothing new. It's just that all of a sudden there's a reason to fight them, you know? Yeah, there's a bunch of children.
Well, because we've had, immigration laws since then. 65 and whatnot,
yeah.
And because we have a lot of people who have been able to come over here and become citizens and stuff, and because we live in a conservative time, you know, this stuff gets media coverage, and the media blows it up all out of proportion, and then people start becoming hysterical about it. That's why you have people talking about it, even though it's been going on, you know, steadily for ever since the 19th century. And, you know, I don't blame people for wanting to come over here. They have no life in Mexico. Most of them are dirt poor. They have no social welfare system. And, you know, they have to have a better life. And a lot of them, and most of them, probably 90-some-odd% of them, probably would rather stay with their families and not have to come over here. They're not coming over here necessarily because they want to. So, you know, coming over here.
Modern capitalism in the United States cannot work without the immigrants coming across the border.
That's true.
Because they depend upon it to depress the wages, to maximize the profit to the company.
Well,
simply put,
Roger, capitalism can't work without someone to oppress.
That's right.
I'm not disagreeing with that. But even if it's a John Doe's painting service, okay, and one guy with a pickup truck, and he gets a job to paint a house, and it's too much for him to do by himself, he has to hire somebody. So he makes a bid, figuring he's going to pay $5 an hour, $10 an hour to undocumented workers, write it off as a $20 an hour contract labor number, but since he's never hired any one person for more than $600, he doesn't have to take out that stuff. He's hired private contractors, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So you've got this guy that's struggling along, making $40,000-$50,000 a year net, but he's only going to be able to do that by exploiting cheap labor. And yet that same asshole will vote for a Republican because they rail against the immigrant labor, but you know, to solve the immigration problem, put the sucker that hires the immigrant labor in jail. Don't put the immigrant in jail. Put the guy that hires him in jail.
Yeah, because when you know, times get tough, you know, they hire these people when they can afford to, and then when they can't, they'll scapegoat them and send them right back to Mexico or wherever wherever Central America, and they don't necessarily house them in very, you know, they don't take care of them while they're here. They just, well, it's like slave labor.
And on top of that, they'll hire them and they'll pay them every 2 weeks, and they love it when ICE comes in and sucks them up on the 13th day and deports them, and all of a sudden they don't have to pay them for the 2 weeks they've worked them.
Yeah.
Yes, and sir.
That,
absolutely.
That John Doe painting contractor has managed to put all the money in his own pocket and never paid the poor suckers that did the work.
Yeah.
Again, Joshua Hammer wrote about Chinese workers being brought into the country illegally and then, you know, used for whatever they could be useful. I wonder how badly hurt the guys were that built the railroad coming across from California, how well they would treat you.
Yeah. Was he a journalist as well as a detective writer, Dashiell Hammett?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Monty Falcon, The Thin Man.
Yeah, his Cousin Lop was one of his best characters. It was his short stories and a novel called Red Harvest and another one that The Dean Curse. Because he was selling to the magazine. He was selling to the Black Cat Mysteries or whatever the hell it was that would, people used to read in this country. Now, they didn't read the highly intellectual stuff, but they sure read a lot. And a good writer could teach you something. That's why I learned about the border crosses. I read that book 30 years ago. It was happening when Hammett was working for Pinkerton's. Hammett later had to go to jail under the House Un-American Activities Committee because he wouldn't give out names.
And yet he served in both the First and the Second World Wars. Hey, I hate to say it, guys, but we gotta knock it off here. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you to the whole Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you for your kind moderation, Sparky. Thanks to everybody for sharing your finite, precious time in this ongoing conversation. Thank you for all the support that keeps the Horn alive. Anybody wanting to help us get out front of Moran Monday and Titanic Tuesday is more than welcome to help. Thank you this evening to Mo Liberal and to Thomas for finishing off the week for us. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACAC, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 yes, Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, y'all.